Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.
Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here's your host, Paul John Roach.
So, hello and welcome to today's show on World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Today, I interviewed the author of a book entitled Brave New Minds, Living in a Future Science World, where, if you like, conventional and alternative science meets in the quantum field of all possibility. The author, Elliot Maynard, is a Renaissance man, with expertise in the fields of global ecology, coral reef ecology, oceanography, and tropical rainforest biology. He's the founder and president of Arcos Cielos Foundation, looking at futurism, consciousness, and conceptual design. He's also involved with the Aerospace Technology Working Group and numerous other future-thinking think tanks. He's also an artist and a sculptor, musician, and filmmaker. And his book, Brave New Mind, Living in the Future Science World, reflects this eclecticism and all these wide-ranging talents. It's a veritable smorgasbord, isn't it, of future science technologies and paradigms, and offers 25 master keys to shifting our awareness and ability to create solutions for the future. So it's a joy to welcome Elliot Maynard to the show today. Welcome. We're glad you're with us.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate you having me on.
You know, there's lots to cover in this book, but I think the key is the quantum idea, isn't it? That this is a both-and universe. You know, there's a tendency towards a particle or a wave, depending on how we approach it. And so with that understanding, everything becomes possible. Nothing is fixed.
Yes, you've got that right. And essentially, what has been put forth in the book is a new operating system, much like we have for our computers, which is analogous to consciousness in many ways. And this operating system has 25 different facets or pathways. It forms a living fabric so that anyone can learn to access and work with the quantum field. And I'm absolutely delighted that Unity has taken the vanguard here and is leading religions as religions should be, a free, a nurturing environment so that each individual can find their own attachments in the consciousness field.
And, you know, this is so important, isn't it? And there seems to be two ways of looking in terms of, you know, both religion and in science. And the one is sort of the rigid old ways of thinking, which is ill-service, really, and then there's the more flexible approaches, and of course they choose off sometimes. I think that the more that these new ideas of quantum thinking take hold, you know, the more the rear guard kind of pulls back and goes back to the fundamentalist truths, and maybe that's a sign that things are moving forward. You know, when there is outrage from the old school thinking, you know, that it's bound to happen, isn't it? There's bound to be that.
Absolutely, this is why I call the title Brave New Mind, because it takes courage to move in from the present into the future and work with this quantum field. We have a natural fear of the unknown. We have a fear of being removed from our place of comfort, as is so apparent in the government and religious and educational institutions of our time.
That's true. I like what you said in the book about if you want to find a mystic, don't go to a monastery or a cave or whatever, but go to a modern company that's working in these new fields, because you have out of the box thinkers who are willing to really put it into practice, and I love that idea too. Mysticism is not just zoning out; it's about taking those higher understandings into everyday life, isn't it? I think this is what's powerful about the brave new mind. It's a mind that's willing to be both in the world and not of the world, but definitely be both.
Yes, and as you mentioned, there is a fair number of global society that would rather couch themselves in denial, much like ostriches burying their heads in the sand. And they will continue to fiddle while Rome burns, or play music while the Titanic is slipping beneath the waves. Meanwhile, those of us who are leading the vanguard into the future will find new support. And I believe that this ascension frequency, the frequency of living, of everyday existence now, is such that those who did the old begging bowl thing or living in the cave for 30 years, it's no longer necessary, because you can achieve enlightenment and access to the quantum field, this wisdom, by simply, I tell people to imagine a small switch in their mind. We are taught by our rigid left-brain institutions never to believe anything we cannot prove to be true. So we flick that switch to open the possibilities and just not disbelieve anything we can't believe prove to be untrue. It's that simple. And by doing so, I guarantee you, if you just put this little statement in your mind, miracles will start to happen in ways that you never imagined.
I agree completely. There's that old story of the person who was late to class, and the professor had put the test up on the board. He'd also put two other formulas up, and unbeknownst to this late student, these formulas were unsolvable theorems or whatever. And so he sat down, did the paper, and then he started moving on to the completely insolvable theorems. And he worked the one out and then presented it to the professor, and the professor said, "This is impossible. You can't have worked this out." And he said, "Yeah, but I did." And don't you realize this is one of the great unsolvable, math problems of the universe? And of course, he didn't realize it, So therefore, he wasn't intimidated by it. And it's exactly what you're saying. It's only because you train your mind to think this is not possible that then, that's the quantum field, that it says, yes, okay, it's not possible then, because that's the way you're approaching it. But it doesn't have to be like that, does it? We can think the impossible and achieve it, because with God, if you like, with the creative essence, all things are possible.
Yes. Absolutely, and we need to entertain the outrageous and enjoy the feeling of being a real warrior, a spiritual warrior, and new enlightened religions will create a very nurturing environment, just as our new educational systems will, so that each person will be able to find their own pathway to enlightenment or wisdom, or however you want to put that, happiness especially.
Right. And it begins, with your first master key, which you call Super Sense Sonics, right, which is expanding what we believe to be possible for our senses. I guess there is so much more than just what we take for granted with the narrow spectrum of sight we think is all that we have.
Well, yes, and thank you for taking the enlightened pathway, because, as you know, many of the well-established religions in the past have come down really hard on people with special abilities because, as you know, those in power want to keep the secrets hidden and keep the control factor going. Instead, the new religion forms a garden where people can grow and interact and celebrate in periods of happiness and support others in times of difficulty the way we have to go through this physical realm.
And so your message is, you know, expand, right? Expand into this new possibility.
Yes, don't be afraid to move into the future. Don't be afraid to exist in the present. And one of the things that I believe both education and religion and also parents should teach others in their family is to face the problems. Who teaches this except parents right now, and how few of them? And I think this is where a religious organization can be greatly helpful by providing discussion groups and simple support, kind support and mentoring, because people need to learn to face problems immediately, if possible, and deal with them, and the reward for that is that you get to pass go and go on to the next step.
Right. One thing you mentioned in terms of ecology is environmental generational amnesia. I thought that was an interesting concept. That is, you start your life thinking that whatever's around you is the norm, and then the fact that it's changed so much since the previous generation, you're not necessarily aware of that loss. And so each generation accepts the degradation, if you like, of the environment as a normalcy. I'm thinking of steam transport, you know, trains. That must have changed the landscape dramatically for people in the 19th century, and yet today we look at it as if, oh yeah, that's perfectly normal, and maybe folks in the future will find, you know, these superhighways that I find in excretion sometimes, that's just normal, but, they're a necessary evil perhaps, but they're definitely not normal, are they?
No, they're not particularly enlightened, since they've simply been the tracks, the horse tracks and the carriage tracks and the railroad tracks that have been converted into what we consider a modern transportation system. And by all rights, if we had a really enlightened civilization, we would have a railroad, a high-speed light rail that would take us from coast to coast in several hours. You could use your cell phone and computer and eat dinner and have drinks on the train and sleep there if necessary. We should have this going from East Coast to West Coast and all the way down to the tip of South America, this is conceptually speaking, and up to Canada and perhaps across the Bering Strait. We could have done this because in 1970, two major companies in the U.S., GM and GE, maybe two like that, invented the magnetic levitation trains, and there's not one in the U.S. except perhaps in Disneyland, I think, Disney World.
And yet, if you go to Europe, for instance, or Japan, you know, we see that the infrastructure there is much more well-developed in terms of mass transit, isn't it? And we're particularly bad in Texas because, in the East Coast, I think there's a little more of this mass transit available, but come to Texas, it's very few and far between. We're definitely the car culture, I guess, because everything is so spread out that people feel like, you know, the only way to get places is to jump in your car. That isn't necessarily so, though, I don't think. Again, it's a paradigm.
I think we've retreated into this the steel encapsulated ego, as one wag put it. Our vehicle is now become a great issue, and it's our second home and our home on wheels for many people. And
right.
So this creates a whole new culture, and it creates extra complications, extra stress, extra problems for those trying to get from one place to another efficiently. So, yes, this is all part of what we're muddling through as a culture, and hopefully we can start to use more practical ways, and practical in the quantum sense, in the you know, highest sense, than motivation by money and profit and all of these things which are driving so much of our society today.
And of course, you advocate for a total shift in the education system, don't you?
Absolutely. And basically, I've created an educational system that's an overlay for anything from kindergarten to lifelong learning. And instead of taking a, quote, norm, which is some kind of a theoretical left-brained conception, it's probably an industrial age grid, we move into creating an environment where each student and the teachers, too, can begin to learn from their own center. And then you provide support and feed them into areas that will complement that central theme. And then you get them working together in teams on projects such as putting up a website or producing a newsletter. And these things, each project has many different tasks and teaches them how to work in a team way. And I think this same format is beautiful for a religion that is open enough and willing enough to move into the future, because it can work very, very closely with education, and it provides much more consciousness support than the education system by its nature.
We see examples of this, don't we, in Waldorf schools, maybe the Rudolf Steiner method and Montessori education to a degree, and some of the more liberal colleges, you know, Sarah Lawrence College perhaps, and you know, they are aware of a more holistic approach and a more heart-centered approach, if you like, coming to the innate intelligence within the person, rather than, you know, like a tabula rasa that has to be imprinted with information from outside. So, you know, we see examples, but so much more could be done, right?
Yes, and just one example. One morning, my wife was very quiet and she was meditating, and I asked her what she was doing, and she said she was putting light on the group of students she was going to work with the next day, that this was something that they did traditionally, I believe, in the Waldorf school. I had not known this. But what a lovely thing to do for either a teacher or a pastor to have a meditation and put light on the students and the teachers and on the congregation and others that take part. Because this is really what religion's all about and education should be all about. But using
this light
and consciously doing it is really a breakthrough, and it can create all kinds of amazing experiences for all concerned.
I like that. Yeah, somebody in our community last week who does this kind of thing sent me her meditation that she provides for teachers, you know, that they can take and sit and listen to during their break, and it totally renews them for the day and gives them, you know, the power to see in that enhanced way. And I love this. So, yeah, it's like the 100th monkey, which is one of the old quantum leap type critical mass stories what we heard from way back, but you repeat that story, you know, the idea that they learn to do a new task and all of a sudden after a particular critical mass was reached, all the monkeys were able to do it. And I think this is true too, isn't it? Referring back to the resistance to new, I think when enough people have this new consciousness transformation occurs. Looks like we're going to the break, folks. I'm with Elliot Maynard talking about his fascinating book, Brave New Mind, Living in a Future Science World. Join us in 2 minutes after these messages from Unity.
Unity Online Radio brings you inspiring programs on a variety of spiritual topics. Giving to the network is now easier than ever. Simply text Unity Radio to 72727 from your smartphone. You can make a one-time or recurring donation. Your gifts help us offer enriching spiritual programs that reach listeners around the world. Text Unity Radio to 72727. Thank you for your support.
Mm-hmm. you have a coach in your corner, a life coach, that is. Like a coach in sports, a life coach can help you set clear goals and develop the confidence and tools you need to achieve them. Join certified life coach Carla McClellan Tuesdays at 3 p.m. for Vibrant Living on Unity Online Radio. Each week, Coach Carla and her guests will share strategies and solutions designed to help make your life more focused, more meaningful, and more vibrant. Do you have a specific issue or topic you'd like to discuss with Coach Carla? Call in toll-free Tuesdays at 3 p.m. during Vibrant Living, Life Coaching with Carla.
I will leave this world as it is.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find my God.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm talking with Elliot Maynard on his book, Brave New Mind, Living in a Future Science World, and harnessing, if you like, the quantum field of all possibility. And part of that is in terms of artistic expression, whether it be art or sculpture or music, and Elliot has chapters on each one. But I love this idea that, you know, we know when we're children, we are naturally artistic, aren't we? And it's bred out of us sometimes. You know, we're told we're not very good at it or whatever. But a child doesn't know that. It just wants to express itself. And I think this idea that we can express ourselves as adults, we can reimagine what's possible in that regard. I think this is hugely important, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Reimagining the future and finding others of like mind that you can begin to enjoy conversations and meetings where there's not antagonism and the usual sarcasm that goes on in academic and business circles. So all it takes is a basic implicit agreement for people to be supportive, to try not to knee-jerk react to something a little out of line that someone might say, something a little unusual, because this is what happens when anyone tries to do anything new. And as you remember, in the days of Giordano Bruno and some of the other great scientists of the time, Galileo, one was toasted over the coals, I believe, the other barely escaped. So now we have an opportunity, because there are so many like-minded people, to really bring this religion and the quantum field together, because I feel that this quantum field is essentially the essence of the Creator, of God, and that's my interpretation and from my own experience.
And so what we're saying is that the old rigidities have gone, right? That God is a tendency to be, not just being itself. And so therefore that opens up a whole new field of understanding. And of course the great mystics understand this and have tapped into it. It's not a new idea for them. In Tibetan tradition, you know, we've got these teachings of the natural great perfection that we already are, And you see it in the samadhi experiences in Hinduism, etc. So I think this is well documented in spiritual technologies of religion. And each religion, it seems, has a mystical path that is usually shunted to the side because it's kind of weird. But in the past yes. 100 years, we've moved it to the center, haven't we? The great diaspora, for instance, of Tibetan Buddhism has brought these spiritual technologies to everyone, and this is a wonderful thing. I think that it's time to get all these ideas out of the closet and into our hands so that we can apply them in our lives.
Yes, absolutely. In many ways, they are pathways, and just as these 25 paradigms. Are spoken about in the book as part of this new operating system. And one of the features of this is that we visualize the old industrial age paradigm as a box, and if anyone tries to push the sides of that box too hard, the nail that sticks up will get hammered, as the Orientals say. And people, when anyone tries to do anything new, there will be a certain percentage of people guaranteed that will suddenly and illogically attack the person because of the fear of change, the fear of the unknown. And this is one thing that we all need to help if we're teachers or mentors or religious leaders. We need to help people deal with fear because they're not told how to do this. Nobody teaches them how to do it. Fear of death, fear of the unknown, fear of losing people, fear of loss of money, not having enough money. When this fear comes up, I've talked with many healers, and it sometimes is a barrier for healers because people fear the actual healing process to be a miracle, and in their mind, in their linear mind, it's not acceptable. So learning to open up and embrace the fear and hold it like you would a kitten or a puppy or a baby, and within a few minutes, it will dissolve. And if you start to do this, you can move ahead each time a little bit and open up a little bit more. And you'll be more comfortable, you'll be more happy, and you won't have so many negative things to overcome in the longer haul.
Right. And if we accept that everything is part of the field, right, so even fear is not a problem for us, it becomes something to look at. And I think it was Krishnamurti that said, you know, we need to look at our fears closely because that's what's going to illuminate us as much as anything else. It's not the fact that it's a problem. It's the fact we just don't want to look at it. And if we can fearlessly look at everything, whatever it is, then we enter into this field of possibility again. And some of my greatest, I'm sure this is true for you too, Elliot, is some of my greatest breakthroughs have happened, you know, when it seemed like that was the worst thing that could have happened to me. But in fact, it turned out to be one of the best things because, you know, that's the way the universe works sometimes, isn't it?
Absolutely. And my skin is prickling as you speak because this is a sticky one. Learning to face our fears is something that really, really needs to be brought into for parents, for teachers, for religious leaders to facilitate and help with us. And then, you know, if you have discussion groups, you're going to have people share their own personal experiences. And then when they become more coherent, they begin to form a new consciousness, and that fear will tend to dissolve away, and they, again, can open up and move along.
Right. Interesting, isn't it? And
yes,
it's all about vibration, too. You talk a lot about vibration and frequencies in the book, and one of the more fascinating and colorful characters, of course, is Tesla, who invented pretty much, or discovered the alternating current and many other things, but saw things clearly on that quantum level, didn't he? And I could imagine the whole thing and then set it down as an invention. He's sort of lost in the light of Edison. Sometimes people have forgotten him, and yet maybe he was the greater genius. I don't know.
Well, he did set up a system of electricity that would have eliminated the power grid that we have all over this country. And think of how expensive and time-consuming, and all of the trees that need to be cut for telephone poles, and the vegetation cleared underneath it for the power lines. And we would be rid of this grid had it not been for the vested interests of others who took over that system and buried it back. Yes, Tesla
right.
was all about harmonics, and he had a little device that I understand he used to like to entertain people. And so he had this small device that they were down in some cellar of a basement of a New York place where he was working, a kind of a warehouse place, and he put it on a metal beam and turned it on, and it started to create a vibration. And if we go to another analogy, in the military, when they march over a bridge, this is very true in World War One and Two, they always break cadence, because if you march over a bridge in cadence, it can set up a harmonic vibration that will tear that bridge right down. And that happened once in a bridge up in the Bay Area, I believe, when the wind created a certain harmonic with the cables on the bridge, and the bridge just started to sway back and forth until it broke in the middle. So Tesla had to turn this thing off because it kept magnifying and magnifying, and the building, it was like an earthquake. So he cut it off. Yes, he was all about energy and vibration.
Right, fascinating stuff, right. And, you know, I think there's a whole lot more to discover in that area too, isn't there? Well, your book is filled with this, like I said, about frequencies and subtle energies, etc. One thing I find fascinating, you have a chapter on it, or a section on it, is 3D printing. I love this concept because, you know, the old paradigm is sort of two-dimensional, and okay, I can copy something and I can get wonderful prints from these machines, but now we're at the level of 3D printing, aren't we, where we can actually create objects and create infinite variety of things, because we're, as you say, adding rather than subtracting. The old paradigm was you chipped away at something until you created it, and now we can actually build it in a 3D printing format. I love that. For some reason, that fascinates me. So tell us more about that.
Yes, this is one of the most explosive technologies in the sense of expansion, infinite expansion. And I've seen all kinds of amazing things happen. For instance, most people don't know that or don't think about the fact that our satellites and the International Space Station and the vehicles that go back and forth are pretty primitive in certain ways. They still have nuts and bolts and rivets in many of them. And SpaceX, Elon Musk, have been using a 3D printing technology that is actually laying down space-age materials, in other words, titanium-type metals and special high-density plastics. Their idea is not to use nuts and bolts and rivets in the satellites anymore, but to print them ultimately in one piece. And they've gotten to the stage, apparently, where they can make a sheet that is 1 meter, roughly 1 square meter, and that's pretty good. And SpaceX has already created a rocket nozzle from metal, 3D printed it, and tested it in a flight. So this is... And they've already got one on the International Space Station, a 3D printer specially designed for zero gravity. They're using stem cells, for instance, to create new organs and this sort of thing, too. All of this is happening right now.
Well, this is an interesting interface, too, isn't it? It's biotechnology and, you know, being able to maybe create spacecraft or whatever out organically, you know, so they actually can mend themselves and have a their living surfaces, the living beings, as well as being vessels to travel in. And you mentioned also in the book that you know that you quoted some Air Force folks who said that we already have the technology to go into deep space. we're not necessarily using it right now, but it is available.
Absolutely. When you really think of it from an enlightened viewpoint, it's very wasteful in terms of time, energy, and money to create a quote, spaceship, which is essentially like a submarine, an inflated submarine that's going through space and have to drag all of the... First of all, you've got the human occupants, so you've got to have oxygen and a recycling system for the waste and all the food necessary. And then, on these prolonged periods, it can be very difficult to get along with each other. So... We have all these difficulties now. According to this aerospace engineer who did some favors for some higher-up people, and I have a great faith in this man's integrity and ability. He's worked for the Department of Defense and many other places and been into Area 51 and 53. And he told me that for the last 20 years, he said that people really knew their hair would curl. They've been traveling to the moon and Mars and outer space for 20 years using something like a Stargate or transporter technology, which is in the Stargate series. Many of these ideas are brought down from the higher realms or from the future in science fiction because many aerospace engineers, when they retire, they leak out their secrets in fiction because there's no penalty for that.
Right, yeah. So lots of things going on, you know, some of it not so savory. I think, you know, there's been books written about, you know, for instance, ELF, is it, extremely low frequency, and its effect on you know, well, dolphins and whales and all this, and sea creatures washing up on the shore dead as a result. And again, I don't know how much of that is scare tactics or how much of that is. It's true, but part of the danger of modern technology ill-used is that it can create as many problems as it solves, right?
Absolutely, and I tell people, for instance, and this is a hard one for them to swallow, I tell them that biotechnology, just like dynamite or gunpowder, is not in itself good or bad. It's how it's used. And you need to... understand, we need to, when we do this research, we certainly need to do our best to find out what might happen, what they call, it's like friendly fire in the military. It's unintended consequences. And Monsanto has provided a very bad example. But on the other hand, I tell people, look, put yourself in other people's shoes. Learn to do this. Don't just react. People who work in Monsanto don't go around thinking they're doing something evil. They're just doing they're doing their job, most of them, to feed their family and all of this. And this is something that got off the rails. It was motivated by greed and this sort of thing, and the proper precautions were not taken. And I think if we try to turn this around, I think it's a good example for us to prevent a lot worse things that could have happened up the road. And bottom line, if people don't want to have GMOs, we can have a label for products that says no GMOs with one of those circles with a dash through it. That solves that problem, so you don't have to look at every little thing. It either has them or it doesn't. And the other thing is that when people begin to not buy the products, the bottom line, the company is not foolish, and Monsanto had a very bad quarter, I believe, 2 or 3 months ago. So if people stop buying the products, that they can, our company will go to other products and other ways to make money, increase the bottom line.
Right, exactly. So we power to the people, folks. We speak with we vote with the what we actually consume, and I think that's hugely important. So, question before we go to the break: will we reach a stage, or have we already reached a stage where artificial intelligence actually begins to think creatively and have its own free will? What do you think?
Well, I have quite a bit to say of that. Artificial intelligence. One of the points is the interfacing between the human energy field and the AI field. In other words, our car our computer, our cell phone, all of these things have a certain amount of consciousness, the electronic consciousness, the biological consciousness. And I have some examples that I can talk about after the break if you'd like.
Yeah, I think I hear the music. So we're going to the break. I'm here with Elliot Maynard talking about his book, Brave New World. Let's talk about artificial intelligence and how that interfaces with human consciousness when we come back. Join us after these messages from Unity.
Guidance and direction are bubbling up from your soul all the time, even at night.
Benefits of spiritually conscious living start now. For a time-tested method to live with purpose and release your infinite potential, tune in to the Yoga Hour, Living the Eternal Way, with Yogacharya Ellen Grace O'Brien, every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Pacific, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Experience the peace and joy promised by A Course in Miracles? Or are you still struggling to truly live your beliefs from moment to moment? Let Reverend Jennifer Hadley help you focus on your intent to be the love, be the peace, through practical application, by walking your talk. Experience the healing live every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Central on A Course in Miracles, Living the Love, Walking the Talk, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Now back to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
Well, welcome back to the third segment of our show today. I'm with Elliot Maynard. We're talking about his book, Brave New Mind, Living in a Future Science World, a quantum field world where everything's possible. And that's a knife edge because sometimes the unexpected can happen. One of the fields that is quite fascinating, of course, apropos to all of us, because most of us are involved with technology in some degree, is the idea of artificial intelligence and whether it can become, whether consciousness can arise, I guess, is the bottom line, within artificial intelligence. So tell us more about your thoughts on that, Elliot.
Well, my approach is a little bit different. One of the 25 points that I give for achieving enlightenment is interfacing the human energy field interfacing with an electronic energy field. And this energy field can be intelligent if it's a computer, if it's a computer in a car. Some of them are pretty high-end, others are pretty simple. One of the examples I use is playing the theremin. If any of you know what that is, it's an electronic instrument developed by a man named Moog, who is very famous for the Moog synthesizer. And it has an electronic field and an antenna on it. It's a black box, and you stand there, and you interact by putting one hand on a dampening switch, which lowers the tone and raises it, and the other hand on the antenna and moving it different distances and shaping your hand in different ways and moving your body closer or farther, you actually can influence the tone and play along with other music. Now, if we step up to the new paradigm, we begin to watch our learning process and acknowledge the fact that there is an intelligence, an artificial intelligence. Now, let me jump again to another artificial intelligence which affects us all. This is the global internet. Now, this is a self-organizing entity. You could call it the extension or the amplification of the global brain, the global consciousness field. And it's done tremendous things by collapsing time and space, and in many cases, there's no mention of race or color or in many cases, even where these people are from. I think this is a wonderful example of how transformation is taking place, even though the gurus and other New Age people did not really think of these things happening quite in this way, but it is affecting every person on this earth who watches an electronic smart television or the computer news on the computer, or communicates that way through their tablets and cell phones.
Right. So the line between volition, and free will and automation is a difficult one, isn't it? Because as a machine becomes more and more complex and subtle, it seems to act as if it has its own volition. You know, like in that old 2001, the Space Odyssey. You know, well, HAL 5000 yeah. decided to shut down everything. And you know, had a will of his own, and he may still have been working on programming, but it seemed awfully real, you know. And he became a sort of a menace. You know, evil arose in the machine, if you like. So it's a difficult one, isn't it, to know if it's true consciousness or if it's just a system of more and more subtle programs.
Well, there's a famous individual named Rupert Sheldrake, who you probably know about, and he wrote a fascinating book about I don't have it right in front of you, it's The Life of Inanimate Objects, something to do with this. And he tells stories about people in an office who have their duplication machine in a separate room, and there's a sign on it that says, please do not use, you know, cuss or bang on the machine or do any of that, because some of these machines, they react to this. And he has stories that are actually unbelievable. He's a man that has been way ahead of his time and one of my special idols.
Right, because he's into the morphic fields and everything, isn't he?
Yes.
Which is similar to this quantum field we're talking about. And, his work has been denigrated by so-called, straight scientists, academics, but still, he's fascinating stuff. I'm going to have Matthew Fox on my show. Rupert and Matthew wrote a book a few years ago called The Physics of Angels and the Interface of...
Wonderful.
Yeah, it's a good one. Interface of spirituality and this quantum field understanding. I want to move to another subject, and that is extraterrestrials. And this is another area where you have strong ideas, and you talk about exopolitics and et cetera. So in your opinion, this is very real, right?
Absolutely. I foresee a world where children from their earliest beginnings are taught that these things are normal, these extra sensory abilities that we have, each one of us in different ways, are normal, that death is a graduation, it's not to be feared anymore, and all of these things would change so much about our lives and our attitudes and the tremendous amounts of stress we're dealing with because of our technology. So, yes... I lost my train of thought. There you go.
Well, I was talking about UFOs and extraterrestrials,
yeah, okay.
That thing. Yeah.
Okay, my conviction comes this way. I have sat down and had one-on-one discussions with two individuals. The first is Robert Dean, a retired military with the highest cosmic top secret clearance, and he actually invented the red phone and was involved when the Russians and the Americans, at the time the red phone was invented, there were fleets of 100 UFOs going back and forth over the NATO space between Russia and England, and of course the U.S. was involved in it, and the Russians thought it was the Americans. The Americans thought it was the Russians, and they were about to press the button, and this is why the red phone existed. Now, this man told me that on several occasions he had sat down at tables with military brass, men from government, and black suits and this sort of thing, and several different types of ETs, and this had been going on for quite some time. And the other person, his name was Robert Dean, and I've written about him in my book, and he still gives talks and has YouTube presentations. Also, Charles Hall was a weatherman in Area 53, and he talks about the tall whites that were there before the American military came in. This was a race of sort of fragile, taller people. They can move very fast. They live to be 300 years old. So the military kind of cut a deal with them that they'd protect them out there. And Charles personally told me about experiences with them coming to look at him. And one of the lady ETs brought some children. And I said, "How did you feel?" And he says, "I was scared to death." And I said, what did they want to know? And he said, "They wanted me to open my mouth so that I could show them my teeth. We had a different numbers of teeth." All of these things. This man is teaching nuclear physics now, and he's written several books. And all this is referenced again in the new book.
Right. Fascinating stuff. Well, we had a large UFO pass over a town just south of Fort Worth a couple of years ago, and you know, police saw it. All kinds of people said, and it was large. It was like 4 or 5 football fields long, and you know, I'm sure these things happen on a regular basis. I've seen unusual phenomena myself during my life, so it's eminently possible, I think, isn't it? So,
well, the old paradigm argues, well, are UFOs real? There's no question about it. There are thousands and thousands of credible witnesses, military people, common people, and especially now that people have cell phones, it's not a case of do they exist or not. It's who they are and what about them. And the same is true with other phenomena, you know, all the ET, the extraterrestrial visitations, the reasoning behind it. And I've come to a funny, tongue-in-cheek conclusion that if we think our politics is screwed up and complicated globally, each country has its own. I've had wonderful conversations with Israelis and Palestinians. I worked over in Kuwait in the Arab world, and we always used to say we could solve the damn problems, but it's our government. They'd say it's our government policy. And so, yes, we are all in the human race, but they have really complicated exopolitics. There are different groups with different agendas, and generally speaking, it's not difficult to, when someone has a bad intent, an ET has some bad intent toward you, you simply need to say no that way, and the interference should stop, although sometimes you need to get some special help from different psychic practitioners.
Fascinating stuff. All right, we got a couple of minutes to go. If there's one thing you want to impart to our listening audience today, Elliot, what would it be? What's the most important aspect of your book and of the work that you're doing?
Well, so many amazing things are happening. One of the areas I work with is channeling, and I took on channeling as a scientist. I worked with many, I have like 400, 500 pages of transcribed channeling sessions. I would cross-reference different channelers and ask questions that usually a scientist would ask. And, you know, it's all part of this wondrous new a new view. It's like getting into a brand new car that has all this kind of technology, and all we need to do is come together and support each other and have a ground common agreement on certain principles, and the rest of it we can work out if we keep that commonality and coherence. And using the term love in a more technical way, you get a person that is encouraging, that is mentoring, and this is the kind of person we need to be as we get older and bring the younger generations right into this future and living from the present into the future, bringing the future to us, because it will happen,
yeah.
And it's all written about.
fascinating stuff. Let me tell you about next week's show, folks, and then we'll say goodbye to Elliot. Next week, June Cotnup joins me to talk about her book. It's called Garden Blessings, a collection of poems, prose, and prayers celebrating the love of gardening. So a book on nurturing and the power, the healing power of nature and our own gardens. And we can create a garden anywhere. So this should be a lovely show, too. But right now, I want to thank Elliot Maynard for being with me and bringing his fascinating insights. Elliot, if people want to get hold of you, do you have a website?
Yes. Our website is, our foundation name is Arcoscielos, which is one word, and I'll spell that. It's Arcos, A-R-C-O-S, C-I-E-L-O-S, at yahoo.com. I'm sorry, that's .com. Arcoscielos.com.
Yeah. Right.
And that's our website. And I also have several video reviews on the book, and those are on YouTube. You can Google Brave New Mind or Elliot Maynard interview. And that
tells
a lot of information about the book. And the book is already up on Kindle, so you can get preview of it, a free sample, to see if you like it.
Check it out, folks. There's a lot of fascinating information. It's very thought-provoking, and it opens us up to this quantum field of all possibility, which is something we talk about a lot in Unity, this idea that there are infinite possibilities. Why settle for anything less? We're glad you listened in today. We want to thank Elliot for being with us. Thank you so much.
And thank you for doing what you're doing and creating such a wonderful show and reaching out and being a true leader.
Well, thank you, and likewise. And I hope that you all join us again next week and have a wonderful, if you're listening live, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. It's going out just before Thanksgiving 2014. Blessings to all. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world, and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on Unity FM, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Truly understand the laws of the universe and live a life based on these profound and unwavering truths, then your dream life starts today. No more waiting, no more wandering. If you're ready to let go of the striving and move into the allowing, you are ready for Everyday Attraction on Unity Online Radio. We study the teaching of Abraham given to us by beautiful Esther Hicks, so we can release confusion for clarity, exchange struggle for serenity, and have the time of our lives today. Join host Ray Zander every Friday at noon Central Time, 10 a.m. Pacific, on Unity Online Radio for Everyday Attraction, where the law of attraction gets real.
Inspiration only takes a moment. Consider these inspirational thoughts from the Quest for Prayer from Unity House Books. Holding a special, loving thought for other people benefits us as much as it benefits them. In fact, in some ways, even more so. Consider, for example, what happens when you wash your car with a hose. What gets clean first? The inside of the hose, of course, because the water must rush through the hose before it can clean the car. So it is when we hold loving thoughts for someone. As those loving thoughts rush through us, they bless us first. It is a win-win situation.
This meditative moment is brought to you by Unity.
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.